Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehr on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio. First, some breaking royal news. If you're not watching cable TV, you might have missed that Buckingham Palace has announced that Kate Middleton is expecting. Some breaking news on this Monday morning. But we're going to shift to another story. Last month, Brian opened up the phones here for your calls on lessons learned after Sandy. And he asked what worked and what didn't after the disaster. And we heard from Joel in Jersey City about communication.
I resisted the triple play from the various cable companies and Verizon's, and I stayed with my old copper line telephone service. And during the 5 days I had no electricity, I still had a dial tone.
Those copper wire landlines were a lifeline for many during the storm, and not just for Joel. But both Verizon and AT&T have announced that they're moving away from the copper wire lines in favor of wireless or fiber optic networks. With us now to explain these changes and what he sees as the need for more oversight is David K. Johnston. He's a visiting lecturer at Syracuse University's College of Law and is the author of The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. You might have read his opinion piece on this in the New York Times last week, in which he argued for more regulation for telecom companies. Welcome back to WNYC, David.
Well, thank you for having me on, Anna.
Of course. Now, let's start with what we heard from Joel in Jersey City. Can you explain the difference between copper wire lines and the new services that AT&T, Verizon, and other companies are pushing, these triple play type plans? Why did copper wire work better during the storm?
Well, copper wire has its own independent power source, and it requires a very minimal power source. So even though the electric grid has gone down, as long as the telephone system has its own power source, it keeps working. There are buildings in America that make telephone calls over copper wires that were installed in the 19th century, and they still work. In addition, the copper wire system has been completely depreciated. That is, all the costs of it have been paid. And by moving people to the new system, what Verizon and AT&T and the other handful of other large phone companies are able to do is significantly increase their revenue. They charge much higher prices. Now, that's in many ways a better service when it works, but it doesn't have the safety and reliability factor of copper wire.
You wrote about a 1913 law that mandates telephone service for all Americans at their residences. Is that via copper wire?
No, it is not, but it is clearly intended to be landline service. What happened is that the Justice Department in 1913 was going to bust up the Ma Bell monopoly, which they finally sued to do in 1974. And in order to retain their status, as a monopoly, Ma Bell agreed to universal service. What the telephone companies are doing now is, with no coverage in the news media that I can find except a few local papers and my work, is eliminating these laws and replacing them. They just did it in California. And the way they're writing the new laws, you have no rights whatsoever. So if Verizon were to say to you, you say, well, gee, I'd like to have Fios service. I'll pay you $150 a month for a triple play from Fios. But in the apartment building you live in, maybe only 50 of 100 apartments want the service, they can say, we're not going to wire your building. We're not going to serve you. And you have no rights whatsoever under these new laws. And the companies are very determined to do this. AT&T employs 120 lobbyists in Sacramento. And the California State Legislature has 120 members. They have 37 on their payroll in Kentucky. They are pouring a fortune into this, and the news media is utterly failing to cover this story.
So this is interesting, because I was thinking that would mean that if the phone company didn't have to bring a line out to my house, if I were building a house out in a rural area, for example, say, where there wasn't a lot of infrastructure, that's what I thought would be affected by these exemptions that you're seeing in states. But you're saying an apartment building, if the telephone company doesn't see it as profitable to wire an apartment building, if they don't have enough customers, they might just not wire it, and not just copper wire, also for
Fios
type of program.
And in fact, in North Jersey, people who have a very beautiful building said to Verizon, we'd like you to wire our building. Everybody wanted service, but they said, we'd like to talk with you about your wiring plan because this is a historic building we've spent a lot of money keeping beautiful. Verizon said to them 4 years ago, we don't negotiate. We'll punch holes where we want, take it or leave it. Now, it turns out one of the people who lives in this building is the chief ratepayer advocate for the New Jersey Attorney General.
Oops.
She's not going to intervene in any way in doing this and misuse her power, but if they know she lives in that building, if they won't wire someone where just politics would tell you would be smart to do that, what hope do you think you or I have dealing with these companies? And the reason they're getting the laws written the way they want is because no one is covering this. No, there is no pushback, and we need balanced regulation. Remember, almost all the regulations that are out there were written by business. It's business that wants regulation despite all the nonsense you hear about the terrible things about regulation. It's business seeking regulation for its benefit.
I want to go back to copper wires because, you know, as you know, the way we use our phones has changed dramatically. A 2010 study found that a third of all U.S. households have already gotten rid of their landlines, up from a quarter just a year before, so it's accelerating. Doesn't it make sense that if less people are relying on landlines for the telecom companies to direct their resources towards things like fiber optic cables as opposed to cable line or copper lines?
But the phone companies are driving this. I have a couple of emails from a woman whose 84-year-old disabled mother her copper wire phone stopped working, and Verizon refuses to reconnect her. People, if you call and you are on a copper wire and say, I have a damage problem in an AT&T area, AT&T will immediately transfer you not to the repair department, but to their new technology phone people to sell you on why you want that. And if you say, well, no, I really want to keep my copper wire phone because it works during storms and there's often outages where I live, they will say to you, well, we don't know when we can get out there to repair it. We'll put in the new system tomorrow if you would like. As to repairing the old one, I'll connect you with someone. You may have to wait on the phone an hour or two, and it may take, months. I mean, they are driving this to get people off of the old system. And for many people who don't use computers, who, you know, I spend a fortune on telecom because I'm a heavy user of it, but I know many people who they just need a phone call to call people. They shouldn't have to pay vastly higher prices for services they don't need.
Hey, telecom companies say that copper wire, though, isn't infallible. They say that the copper wiring in their underground cable vault on Broad Street, Verizon says this was destroyed and that fiber optic cables got through it. A Verizon spokesman told the Huffington Post that most customers use cordless phones that run on electricity, so copper wire phones are useless in an emergency. So by talking about them as better in case of emergency, do the telephone companies have some points here?
Well, yes and no. The cell phone systems only work so long as the battery in your phone hasn't run dry and the battery in their cell towers hasn't run dry. And currently, because of their lobbying, they only have to have 8 hours of reserve power in the batteries. Think about how long it took for water to drain away after this storm. The cell tower systems also have limited capacity. I mean, we remember all the ads about dropped calls, and when there's an emergency, the call numbers go up way above what the current density of cell towers is designed to handle. I am not arguing that we shouldn't be forward-looking, Anna. I do not want to have, and I teach regulation at Syracuse, and I've written as a journalist about regulatory law since the early 70s, late 60s. I'm not arguing that every automobile should come equipped with a buggy whip, okay? But we need balanced regulation, and we're not getting that. There is no news coverage of these issues, so the phone companies are getting exactly what they want. They are framing, when there does come an issue, the discussion entirely in terms of their profit interests rather than the public interest. And this is a matter of public safety. The copper wire system saves lives, because it usually works and works when the rest of the system has gone down. You can certainly point to examples where it didn't work and where the other one did, but overall it is a much more reliable system during disasters.
So a question on regulation. The chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, Julius Genachowski, was on CNBC's Squawk Box in early November talking about communications lessons learned from Sandy.
We really see the relationship of our communications networks to our power grid. You know, power goes down, and that's the biggest hit to our communications networks, and we have to struggle with that as society. recognize that we need to make sure that we take the steps so that our communications networks are up and running, even when power goes down.
So we're going to struggle with this as a society, but any sense what the FCC is looking at?
Well, the FCC, as I show in my book, The Fine Print, along with a number of other federal agencies, is dominated by people who come from or will go back to the industry. They represent the interests of the industry. They are not like the commissions we had in the 50s, 60s, 70s, where there was balance and you had people both unconnected to the industry and connected to it. The FCC, I show, has been ignoring its own rules on telephones and operates basically as a marketing arm of the telecommunications companies. And that's because there is very little consumer protection. The consumer groups have largely disappeared. The Media Access Project, for example, shut down for lack of funding. State governments have radically cut funding for consumer advocacy. We used to have pretty good-sized staffs at public service commissions in a handful of states. Those have been slashed. The consumer advocate in New Jersey's job was eliminated. And what we're really doing is shifting all of the power and the interest to that of the telecom and other utility companies and not having a balanced system that recognizes both the fundamental principle in utility regulation, just and reasonable, just and reasonable prices to customers, just and reasonable profits to owners, and the ideas of universal service and reliability.
So telecom infrastructure and policy, another thing to watch as we follow post-Sandy decision-making. We'll have to leave it there with David K. Johnston. He's a visiting lecturer at Syracuse University's College of Law and the author of The Fine Print, How Big Companies Use Plain English to Rob You Blind. Thanks so much for joining us, David.
Thank you, Anna.
I'm Anna Sale, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC Radio. Coming up next, we'll hear about the 50th anniversary of politically radical puppet theater. Stay with us.